Good evening, everyone. It's Wednesday night at 7 o'clock, and this is our eighth class, is it? The seventh? No. It's our seventh class on the ABD. And this is what we're doing on these evenings is we've taken on the task of working our way through the American Book of the Dead by E.J. Gold. But we've taken a different slant on it. What we're not doing is we're not directly practicing to become labyrinth readers. That's a whole other discipline that people have taken on over the years and have been very, quite successful with it. Should this camera be more of this way?
Actually,
is it okay? Is it okay? Oh, yeah. Well, there's not
set
three.
Set up for three. Okay.
Yeah. And so what we're doing is we're taking a challenge that, in my opinion, that the text presents to us. The text is, it's an unusual text. It's a book that was derived out of a tradition of many, many, many centuries. And out of that tradition, 40-some years ago.
Wow. Really?
Well, isn't that about when he wrote this?
In 1973 or 75.
Yeah,
so that's 35, 40, yeah. Actually, it's going on 40.
40 years ago that he took pen in hand. And there are a number of versions of this book. But the one we're working with is the one I particularly have is the 25th edition of the American
Book. Very much the same.
Much the same. But the point is this. The teachings come about over the millennia when teachers perceive that mankind, humankind, needs some sort of a boost. And from time to time, that signal, that telepathic signal, is boosted by others who are able to so do. Now, the part of what we're doing here, Mary, I mean, go ahead and come on up if you want. Okay.
Hello?
Yeah, this is the class, it's the reading, the study and reading of the American Book of the Dead by E.J. Gold. We are on the eighth class, the eighth part of that particular study. And we're taking what I call the slow reading technique, where we're going as slowly as we need to do for us to absorb it. The group of people that are here, how many people are on right now? So there's 17, 18, some people on. All of these are experienced voyagers. Susan, are you on the phone?
Yes, I am.
Okay, good. And there's going to be some things that we're going to get into in a minute. Okay, but... Pardon?
I just want to let you know, Harry called me, and he's not going to be able to make it tonight.
Yeah, okay, and Hawk Lady is not going to make it tonight either. But in any event, thanks so much. Okay. So, the point is, here's the basic point, okay? Most of the time we approach the American Book of the Dead as a device in which we read for others. That's where a lot of people have come from. That's the training that many of us have had. Someone who we feel warrants it, we work to read for them. What does this mean? We talked about this a few classes ago, but what it means is this, is that the individual has transit it out of the body and into their soul evidence as a as an essential self, really. And they are then purely a voyager. Now, we talked about as being one of the Bardo states, one of them being the moment of death. This this is like being hit by a freight train. And when we're shocked by something, and Dr. Don can tell us this, when someone's in shock, you know, what happens? They just shut down, right? I mean, they go blackout or something like that if you're if you have a trauma or something like that. Either the body gives up, you go into a blackout of sorts. Well, when we have a trauma like that that we can't, that overwhelms us, well, we do what we normally know what to do. We just shut down, right? We go to bed, we pull the cover over our ears, we just go into a heavily buffered state because we don't know what to do with it. Now, think about that moment of death for a minute. Here you are in a body, right? And we have great, great hunger to stay in the body. The whole training of the body is to is self-preservation. You know, I see these little ants crawling around my kitchen counter, and they're so clever, but sometimes I help them along to the next phase.
Saying prayers as they go. Reading
I do, I do in a certain sense. And but it's this physical need for self-preservation, and then the utter unknown of the next moment, right? You have no idea what's going to happen. So this is a conundrum of great magnitude. And so you're sitting there in this moment, and so at the moment of death, what it uses it? It's just you shut down. However, maybe there's a different approach to it. Maybe there's a different approach to it. And the people that are here are, these are pretty much, these are experienced operatives, as I like to call us. These are people that have been through, you know, they've been incarcerated for years in the platform of learning and have emerged with something in their belt. So we're not talking about beginners necessarily, though from time to time there might be someone who's brand new, and we'll let their intuition work their way through it. So if that's the case, we're approaching, attempting to approach a moment in which it's a drastic change for our normal way of everyday life. So two things happen. One, as we read further in the book and we read some of the other literature associated with it, we find that at the moment of death, you know, there's maybe there's a blackout, okay? And some of the instruction, I don't know, is Starananda on tonight? And she can tell us this too, because she is doing a class on the Labyrinth Reader's course in Second Life. But anyway, so you black out, that's what happens. But 2 or 3 days later, that's why we read the clear light for those 2 or 3 days, because most of the time the Voyager is just... But then you enter what's called, you know, the Bardos, the Bardo Todal. And during the Bardo Todal, stuff happens. And part of another way of viewing, working with the American Book of the Dead, is can we incorporate some of this information in such a way that we become more knowledgeable voyagers, right? Now, that's easy for me to say, right? That's just really easy. This stuff is, we're just, you know, these are just words that are coming out of my mouth. And how then do you begin to practice some of the, with some of these transit points? For the last 2 or 3 years, I've been going through a number of different books. You know, I don't know what many books that we've been through, right? And I continue to introduce the idea called the moment of transit, and just recognizing that. Now, so that's what I want to do is start that we are going to begin recognizing these moments of transit. And I, where we ended the class last time is with a paragraph on this particular edition, Ivan. This one's on page 39, and I'm going to this italicized.
This will be a couple of pages off, I think.
Yeah, I think it's before that. It's italicized and starts with the sure way to recognize.
Yeah, right. It's on 34 in the 30th anniversary.
Okay. So I'm going to read that again. The sure way to recognize the macro dimensions of the labyrinth. Okay, that's a qualified statement. The macro dimensions of the labyrinth is to assume that you are already always in them at any moment. At this very moment, we are in the labyrinth of some construct. Most of the time, we're in the labyrinth of a construct that we have thrown out there, and we've created this world. And we look at the world around us and go, oh, yeah, I know this thing. It's real simple. Oh, yeah. Next. And it's just like that. It's the linear mind gives no import to the mystery that is about us. But our job is to make the mystery that's about us an everyday occurrence. I'm going to go back a few paragraphs, one page, and that's in this book. It's page 38, and it's the paragraph that starts with the guide may. You see that?
Yeah.
Okay. So how do we then accomplish this thing that says, assume that you're always in them, those macro dimensions, at any moment? How do you do that without it being fantasy? Okay? Now, there's a reason I'm backing up here. The guide may, through your tendency to convert images to the ordinary and familiar, take many forms and has specific function of causing and continuing the process of liberation. Isn't that interesting? And awakening through a series of miracles or coincidence control. The coincidence control is also called, what's it called? The grace of the guide, and includes all coincidences, like them or not, appreciated or not, in or out of awareness, and any other function or attribute of the guide is strictly imaginary. Now, to initiate the process of liberation, however, one must specifically ask, what does that mean? Why is he saying that? I don't get it. And Susan, if there are comments, you want to just break in?
Yes, I will.
But what does this mean when he's saying there, in order to initiate this process, you have to specifically ask? Anybody? What do you guys think? Okay.
And the ABP speaks of asking the guide so that it doesn't occur before you are ready, so that liberation doesn't occur before you are ready.
So Paul says if you don't ask, it's not intentional, therefore you're just in the dream. Now there's all kinds of commentary on intention and the role that intention plays.
David?
But, yes.
Quite a few people mentioning computer issues.
Computer issues?
And lags and freezes and things like that.
Okay.
Anyway, I thought I'd...
I think Marvette's going to reboot.
Okay, we're going to reboot. What that means is that we're going to go off the computer for about 3 minutes. We'll still be on the phone. What?
Less than that.
Less than that, she believes. Susan?
Yes.
what I wanted to get into, maybe in the last 15 minutes, is the process of, you know, writing the last hours of life.
Okay.
And if you recall, the last time we talked about it, you had a particular comment that quite moved me where you said at some point while you were working on it, you felt like it was automatic writing. Do you remember that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Is it okay with you if we get into that in the class?
Oh, sure.
Okay. And that's when, Ivan, we'll get into that section.
Okay.
All right. I'm going to distinguish automatic. Okay, are we back up now?
Not quite, according to the computer, Dan.
Oh. Okay. So we're up and running. I think you might be able to hear me now. And for some of you, the image is starting to show again. Thanks, Susan, for that.
You're welcome.
So we're back on this point that, so here we are in this strange thing about trying to assume that you're always in the macro dimensions at any moment, and then it says something like, one must specifically ask to initiate and run the process of liberation. Isn't it interesting that he uses that phrase, to run the process?
Like a program.
Yeah.
Just to run a program.
Mm-hmm.
It has, if you've done a certain kind of work, makes sense to you. So,
you want to run or save this program?
So, bottom line of it is that we now have introduced this concept of guides, right? So now there's these guides. There's a guide now.
Yeah, right.
I think it's a guide.
There's a phone that needs to be turned down.
And this
could be a guide.
It's actually, it's a reminding factor.
Weren't you saying that you weren't sure what the guides look like?
You're never showing us what they look like, yeah. So the guides come forth. How do we then recognize those guides? They'll take all kinds of forms, even like with a phone that we forgot to turn off. You might now see the sense of treating everyone and everything as a manifestation of God, as the mystics have said for centuries, including your own essential self, that selfness which resides deeply beyond ego, consciousness, and action, none of which are actually yours, or ever were yours in the sense of ownership, but belong entirely to the world. You, the real you, exists solely as a source of attention and presence. Beyond all action and involvement with the turbulent flow of biological life, itself just a secondary manifestation of the localized field effect probability and indeterminacy all around it. Okay? Make sense? Okay. So, so just jumping ahead slightly, then, always acting as if in the macro dimensions. So that's a methodology that EJ is giving us. Always acting as if we are in the macro dimensions.
39 in this edition.
It's 34 in this newest one.
And it's killing.
And you have that other one. I don't know. Okay. So
I do have a comment as well.
Yeah, go ahead, Susan.
From Sylvia Richardson. When I take a moment to remember that I'm in the macro dimensions, I can see how that is true, and I am amazed how ordinary the entire experience is. Just like EJ says in the book, the ordinariness of it all.
Okay.
Is that when we're acting as it says in here to treat all other people as God? Is that the experience that's taking place?
That's the experience that's taking place. We have to be frightened of that phrase because we bring so much stuff to the table with God. You know, like some of us have had years of training exactly what that means. And
post-traumatic deity stress.
Post-traumatic deity stress. But it's the concept of it that if you suspend judgment about what, you know, we've brought to it, I was fortunate enough to have, you know, 20 years of deep training in the Catholic Church, which helped me immensely, I think, with something. I'm not sure what yet, but it did, and, but it's a different conversation. So that is the case. So let's just say, for me, maybe a safe way of discussing it is, if you're holding yourself in the attitude of macro dimensions at all times, you're on this edge of like a sense of wonder all the time. You walk through this next door. We're in a building right now. And we're going to walk through a door to get to the little atrium there. Then we're going to open the door and step outside. Right now, you have an idea what it's going to look like, don't you?
I know it's going to be a parallel universe. That is my near field parallel.
You're on.
What I wanted to say was, you talked about the ground that we were walking on during that time, and I was thinking of the what we used to call the God game, and thinking of that as holy ground, and whatever that means to us. And then the experience that I've had with treating people as God was a specific thing that was said at the time that the instructions were given, to act as if the person that you're talking to has something important to tell you. And that's, you're looking for what they have to tell you. So in a sense, they are the God to you because they have the information and you don't.
Yeah, so that you don't know what the import of what they're about to tell you is. So you're in a sense, you're in a slight state of surrender to that, to see what will come forth to you. And there's this moment of wonder where you're really listening to the person. I get calls sometimes, and the first thing that happens when I get the call is I recognize who the person is, and I go, and part of my brain actually says, oh, it's so-and-so, it's Joni. Oh, it's Jack. And when that happens, there's a whole bodily sensation that occurs when I accept that posture. I'm very flat, it's very dead, rather than it being alive. And I notice that now that I've watched that characteristic in me, when I watch it occur, now what happens is I go, oh, now why is it that Joni called? What's about to happen here? I'm able to go there. And you never know where it's going to go. Okay? So that's so what I'm looking for are ways and means that you have practiced with in terms of coming up with this concept that EJ has given us in this particular paragraph, but is assume that you're always in the macro dimensions of the labyrinth. Have you adopted any ways and means? MA has told us something that you work with.
I'm working with the idea of parallel universes, and I'm going with the idea that every time I walk through a door, that's another universe. And I can prove it by walking into that universe and forgetting why I went there. And I have to go back to the home universe, whatever that is, and figure it out, and then go back. So I'm working with the idea that I'm switching universes all the time and trying to keep that thread between universes is really hard.
Well, by hard, we mean that we're not going into our regular habitual way of acting, thinking. We're willing to abandon, in a sense, for a little while, the mechanicality of the machine. For for the sake of something else. And the something else that we're talking about is a posture of great value. It's the pearl of great value. This is what we're talking about. And it's worth the stretch. It really is. There's nothing, for me, there's nothing that is more worthy than this. Okay. This is the play.
David, I was thinking also that it's hard here on this plane, and we're talking about keeping that thread going after we die when you're talking about it, you know.
Yeah. Well, you've stolen a little bit of my thunder.
Oh, sorry.
It's okay.
Didn't mean to step on you.
But the concept is that while we're in a body, we can venture out and practice. We can practice being in the macro dimensions, right? You can practice. And because it's kind of like safe because you know you can come back to the body, you go, at least I'm back here now where it's safe again. Because when you posture yourself in that field effect of the macro dimensions, the probability concept is different. You don't quite know what will occur next. Okay? Anything else, Evan? Okay.
We do have a guide.
Well, we have a guide. That's the point here. The guide is entrenched in this concept of coincidence control. And if coincidence control becomes a factor for you, I mean, so if I may, Marvette just walked in the room and it reminded me of the terrific coincidence control that occurred some 20 years ago with an auto accident on the road where one of the team members got into a severe auto accident and in days was just walking around, and 2 seconds later, who should drive up but Marvette? That says something about Marvette, by the way, and her skill, her Voyager skills, which, and she's now claiming
she never usually used that route, and she's never been back there again.
Now she doesn't go that way ever.
Before, I rarely went that way.
So something occurred. Now we can get woo-woo about this, but something occurred such that on that night, at that time, she followed something in her sensing mechanism to go a different way and a different route that she didn't go. I would wager she rarely went there at night because it's not that easy a road to travel when it occurred. I think it was at night, right?
It was.
Yeah, it was at night.
Early evening.
We
weren't usually
on the road. So all of those factors, so does coincidence control, there's an example of a guide.
Mm-hmm.
All right?
Mm-hmm.
So our friend... She also was in a serious car accident, and that changed her life. But I'm pointing out the structure that occurred there because, quite frankly, and I've known her for many, many years, she's highly trained, and for some, I'm underlining and making it bold, for some reason, she went that route that night at that time and was there and available in a sense to macro-dimensionally rescue somebody. Okay?
Yes. And it was a fatal accident.
It was a totally fatal accident.
Not
to our friend.
But we could be there for the being.
And so the presence of someone who is skilled at hanging out with someone in the macro-dimensions was present when a bodily transit took place because somebody, either one or two persons died in that auto accident. I think somebody died later is what it was. But at the event, at the exact site, the A person died. So that is an example of what I mean by the guide. That occurred, that coincidence control occurred. Now, we can just say, oh gosh, wasn't that cool that my friend Morvette showed up then? That's one way to look at it. The other way to look at it is the way that we're striving to look at it. Now, as we open our eyes more into the sense of the macro dimension, and we're going to retell our own stories. We're going to recast our histories. And I've asked people, and this is something you might want to take a look at too, Paul, is take a look at the Appendix C of the American, do you have a copy of the American Book of the Dead? I mean, you have your own too? Yeah. And read through these rebirth stations, right? Particularly, yeah, especially you. I think there's a couple that are going to read, you're going to respond to. And you look at them and you go, okay, oh, this one's, and ponder it for a while, and then you're going to say, oh gosh, you know, when I was 14, this happened. Is Judy on the line?
Yep.
She's online. Which one did you read the other day? Do you remember?
About the faces.
Yeah. Tell, what was that one? Do you have it there, Ivan?
Yeah. Here's
the face changing.
That's pretty weird.
Well, how is it labeled is the question.
So she read it, and that like reminded her, oh, that happened to me. And then she pondered it for a minute. She says, oh, that's happened many times. Okay, it's happened many times. So she dug that out, it's happened many times. That's part of what I'm trying to do here. We've got a tough row ahead of us. One, we're going to try to, we're working with these rebirth stations. At the same time, I want to vitalize this concept, vivify, Judy, I want to vivify this concept of that, assume that you're always in the macro dimensions at any time and make it a walking principle for us. And then eventually we're going to be talking directly about the chambers, which I'm going to talk about very briefly in a few minutes. But are there
any... David, I want to make a comment about that.
Yeah, please do.
It's like once you have the experience of that, it everything changes color. I mean, there was a... an exercise that the actual first time this happened was in when I was studying with a shaman, and basically it was an exercise that we performed with another person, which I won't go into, but after performing it for a while you started seeing the face morphing and you started seeing events. And once I had that experience, then I was able to spontaneously, without even thinking about it, but it was like in my being that I knew that this was possible.
Okay. So if we analyze this a little bit and we parse it. So she says, now, once it was in my being, didn't she say something like that?
Yeah.
I could access it.
Yeah, once I had the actual experience of it once, then it could on its own happen again.
Okay, on its own.
On its own.
So, but, okay, so that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to weave here. We're becoming quilt makers. We're taking out a particular weaving mechanism. But we have to have points upon which to weave. And Judy is now explaining one that she has. And when you work with this material a lot, you'll start to see, oh, there was that, and then there was this, and then there was this other one. Okay?
Well, I have a comment
now,
as well.
Yeah, go ahead, Susan.
Well, when I was writing my postings, I had written one about an experience, and then the next day I realized, wait, I have had this experience before.
Stay close to the phone.
So by writing the first experience, I later realized I've had that experience before. And it allowed me to remember.
So,
she thinks she wrote it.
Susan is saying that she was, you know, if you go on to the Last Hours of Life postings, which we're going to get to in about 10 minutes, she started writing it, and she wrote her third offering, and that reminded her of yet another point that she needed to make. That's what we're calling, we're digging into an area that's already there. It's already there. And now we're saying, let's go harvest that because we need it, because we are macro-dimensional beings. We are macro-dimensional beings. Now we have to give that being some foothold, and we give it the foothold by this kind of work. Okay? we're going so slowly in the text, but I'm going to try to be okay with that and not, I'm okay with that. I hope we're all okay with it, but I'm forced to remind, I was reminded of somebody I was with the other day, and she just, this is a person that I would say lives more on that side of the veil than this side. Is just a common practice for this person. And I would say that she has a skill level in that many of us don't have yet. And so we're doing some stuff. And she says, you know what? I don't think I'm ever going to get out of the seventh chamber.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I, having good ears, knew we had suddenly changed point of conversation, and we were somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
And so for this individual, it's second nature for her to think like that. That's where we're headed, right? So in honor of that event, I wanted to just read a couple of paragraphs from that seventh chamber. In this book, it's on page 98. We'll just read maybe one paragraph. So begin, and seventh chamber. Having thus confronted the visions of the labyrinth, however weak my attention may have been until now, I ought to have gained liberation by now, unless my abilities toward higher development may be so lacking that I have been unable so far to recognize reality. Obscurations from desire and stinginess may well have placed me in a condition of helplessness and awe, too weak to resist the urge to hide from the rumbling, grinding sounds and harsh dissolving radiations. Or in their particular moment. So that's how that individual approaches, in a sense, everyday life. Okay? It's a curious way to do it. I get a lot out of that. Susan, are there more comments?
Yes, we have a Gnostic man.
Okay.
As David had previously said, the rebirth stations, at least for me, occur embedded within the matrix of life.
Right.
The Varda stations subjectively seem to have occurred as ordinary life experiences.
That's the point.
Except
they
in retrospect.
I'm sorry, Susan, I walked over you again. Go ahead.
One more sentence. Except in retrospect, one notices these Varda experiences had or have numinous quality.
So, like Judy is saying, like, at first appearance, these appear to have been just regular experiences, and then upon reflection, they are harvested in a different manner. Now, she has, actually has an access point macrodimensionally, which we'll talk about in great detail as we get into the chambers themselves. That's an actual access point, which will act as a portal for other things, which, okay? So Gnostic Man is telling us the same thing, that, you know, these are appear to be regular. What eyes do you have on when you view the life that unfolds for you? What eyes do you use?
Hello? Often the eyes
that are comfortable. Go ahead, Judy.
No. I had another call. No. I don't have anything to say.
It's just us. You have us.
It's just you.
It's just
okay. All right. I'm just here listening.
Yes, you are. Okay. Shall I go on, Susan?
Yeah, that's all we have for now.
Okay. So just continuing back on page 39 of this book then. Always acting as if in the macro dimensions of the labyrinth, assuming that your senses are deceiving you, will give you the necessary edge to achieve your liberation from the human biological framework of reality perception. How about that? Your experience of the macro dimensions can be altered by the powerful habit of the human. Think as a human, perceive as a human, and most unfortunately, at least in the macro dimensional sense, to react as a human, making the most extraordinary events and objects appear as if they are normal.
So then if you're not paying attention, you might miss it.
If you're not paying attention, they will be ordinary. And your brain says, oh, yeah, I know that one. Oh, that again, yeah.
And Star said, that's what I meant by ordinary.
Precisely. The reality of the macrodimensional state depends on how much attention you can bring to bear on the actual present. If you've learned to function minimally, as have most human primates, with a sort of dim, permanent inattention, punctuated only by an occasional shock, you're not likely to notice the admittedly subtle differences between the organic and macro dimensions. These are subtleties, but they're great, great differences. They're very subtle. It's like a whiff. That you get a little whiff of a scent of something, and you don't pay attention to it because it's just so slight. But if you did pay attention to it, what happens? Or it's just a change in the color tonality about you, and you see the color tonality, and you wonder at that. Or as our wordsmith here, you suddenly hear a word that's a different word than you normally hear. Someone uses a phrase that is so poetic all of a sudden. And you can just go, oh, that's interesting. Or you can suddenly look and you go, where did that come from? Who's that person speaking to? What are they, you know, and wonder about it. So.
I have a comment.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, Gnostic Man was saying, except in retrospect, one notices the Bardo experiences. So I think that as a beginner, I feel myself, I can use the retrospect to help me prepare to look at it differently for the future.
Yeah, perhaps, but the key that the author, you know, that EJ seems to be talking about here is to be having that attention increased in the present, because it's the in order to prepare, you know, to practice for, you know, death, to practice for being out of body, it's like I need to be in the moment, responding to the chamber that I'm in, let's say, to what it is that I perceive in the macro dimensions. I mean, I think all of this that David just read is, you know, suggests to me, the author is saying we are in the macro dimensions all the time, and it's a matter of what we're perceiving or not perceiving.
Yeah.
Right? So you bring your vibrational state, as we've been talking before about vibrations, you increase your attention, expand your attention, diffuse your vision, or whatever it is, and then you begin to perceive the more archetypal, you know, the more that you could ask yourself, like, who were you saying was in Chamber 7? You ask yourself, well, what are the symbols? You know, what is coming to my attention here to indicate what chamber I'm in? Or, you know, actually I was reminded about this idea about the guide, where in this present location in the macro dimensions, where is the guide?
Yeah.
You know, where is the guide in this chamber? There was another game or an exercise, which is to say, since a guide is always present, you can ask yourself in this current space, in the present, where is the guide? Can I find the guide for myself here?
If you begin to
here and now.
If you begin to work with that kind of an attention, you go out into the day, and like I might, either tomorrow or on Friday, I'm going to drive down to an appointment in Sacramento. And one of the things that occurs when I get in the car and I got this ritual that I go through, I'm driving down the road, and I start to ask myself, what color is there today? What colors are out there? What's the tone of the sounds that are up? Is it frenetic, you know, frantic? Do things seem to go smoothly? And you begin to see some of that. So if you begin to look like that in your every single day, you begin to put yourself in a position where you're on a different set of grounds. One of my great authors, which I don't know how people think of him, is J.D. Salinger, mm-hmm. and he has a whole background. I've talked about this a little bit before, but there's a particular character in one of his books, and he's supposed to be quite enlightening. The character says, yeah, I feel like I'm going from one little piece of holy ground to the next.
Mm-hmm.
So can we so stand as we go about our day? Now, I'm going to...
You're running out of time for what you want to
do. I know. We're just going to stop talking about that stuff for a minute.
And all that aside. Holy ground.
Okay. Now, I wanted to revive the conversation about the writing about the last hour of life. If you go to the website, wingsofchaos.com, ABD, there are 10 of them up there right now. And I want to read a couple of things, and then I want to ask Ivan and Susan a couple of quick questions. And I'm just going to read them in whatever order they are. Gerald Porter. Ironically, I am ambivalent about her. He's speaking about his wife here. About her being there when he dies, because I know she will have to endure a painful separation that I would hope to spare her. For me, this is the most difficult challenge death poses. We'll get into that later, Gnostic Man. ERL says, I would have arranged in advance for ABD readings. Ivan L., friends, these testaments on dying are so moving and open such vistas that I had to stop reading them.
Right. Yeah,
Judy H., who in her great verbosity, she says, I merge, among other things. Pathworld, the room became calmer as I leave this old machine behind. Hawk Lady, then she will kiss me, this angel of death. and in return for allowing me to kiss her lips, I will give her my last breath. It will be breathtaking for me. Susan K. says, I want to be free to be myself, whatever that turns out to be. Tom B. says, plants are nice. But dear, the world would become transparent and only love would remain. Harry L. says, doing this exercise, it was like getting ready to be not me, to not be me. So that's what a couple of these people have said. And I wanted to particularly invoke this comment that Ivan made, you know, that something, he read this and something really got him when he was reading it. Do you want to expand on that at all or just let it go?
Discretion is the better part of valor. It would probably be wiser to let it go, but as long as we're not worried about the clock. I find that those testaments, I mean, reading people's such candid, you know, and very heartfelt descriptions and stories, testaments about what they anticipate or how they would like it to be when they die, is just a huge inspiration. I mean, it gives me a tremendous feeling of inspiration, and then there's a certain, trying to think of why it felt sort of overwhelming. It's this idea that, you know, I really have always been drawn to this feeling of the circle of people. Those writings that you just read from, I mean, in every, let's say, if 25 of us all wrote about our last moments of life, there would be 25 different stories. And this is what it's like, I feel, to do this work, is that we're in a circle. And there's every different kind of typicality or different particular person, character, experience, essential self, or like body of habits, or whatever it is that differentiates us or something. You know, in the essential self, we're probably not so differentiated. But it's just the impression to me of so much honesty, so much candor from all of these different people in the circle together. It just, to me, is a tremendous, it's an inspiration, but it's also a lot of energy to absorb. You know, it's sort of like, you know, the other thing that struck me about it is sort of like the angel Haniel I evoke, right, Susan? This is like this is as if the angel Haniel was overseeing these people speaking, because it's the revealing of what's completely honest, not hiding anything, not holding back or not masking who I am and how I feel. And that's, I think, I find that very moving. But it's also, I might have to be in the right mood myself. I might have to be at the right vibrational level to be able to absorb more and more and more of that. That's how I felt. But I did write something for myself.
Yeah, and you did. And it was
at the same time. Yeah.
And at the same time. And
let me just say that a big part of what I wrote was aimed at that, it was much more, you know, briefly, like clearly said by somebody who said, I'm preparing to not be myself. I mean, that's what I felt. What I wrote about was what are the touchstone experiences that I can think of about that have to do with myself expanding, becoming not a primate, not a human, a limited human entity. Because that's where we're going.
Entity, right.
Because that's where we're going in the macro dimensions, and I think that's where we're going as a voyager. If I am the voyager and I experience myself as the voidness of the void, that's not this here.
So there's two, the reason I'm always looking for pragmatic ways in these classes to do stuff, right?
Yeah.
Not just to read a book. And so for me, one of the important things on this was that this if you write this down, it forces you into a different part of yourself, such that you're it's so intimate a moment and such an intimate consideration that you have the right to say what you would like to say at that time. And I was having this conversation with Susan about what she had written, and she was talking about all this and stuff she had written down and all that. And she said at one point, she said, I'm writing this, and then suddenly it seemed like it was automatic writing. Is that about what you said? Remember that?
Yes.
It was like automatic. She says, it was like I'm channeling somebody. And I thought about that for a moment, and I said, no, you're not. You aren't channeling anybody. What am I going to say?
You're channeling yourself.
She got out of her way.
Yeah.
Because of the potency of this exercise and the profound meaning it has for her, that we're so thankful, grateful to be able to share in with you, Susan, is that she had enough energy to get out of her way, and then suddenly somebody else is writing.
And it just became easy. Whereas if you think about doing this exercise, I hear people saying it's hard, but once I started writing and then I let go, it's just like it poured out.
It just poured out. And I think she had the skill at that time to allow herself to be in her essential self, to be in that macro-dimensional self, and it just came forward. It just, she allowed that to occur, and we always call that, you know, I must be channeling somebody because it can't be me. And that's the profound challenge before us, is to allow ourselves to be this macro-dimensional being. And as EJ says, what we're hindered by is the profound power of the habitual tendencies of the human biological machine, as George has said, he calls it the historical personality. This is power that's forcing itself always to be there. It is always about. And it's the battle between powers and principalities that are upon us. And that's the work that we're up against. All right. We're individuals here. We're a small group of people, very small. And yet we have a chance to take a little bit of a stand in a different manner. Okay? And because if we can do that, we can free those around us, too. They can have a moment of freedom when they're about us.
We do have a few comments.
A few comments. Go ahead.
Mark Roach is saying, given what David was saying about the color of a day and other parts of what he's been saying and spoken of, it seems that noticing for patterns and for breaks in patterns can be useful indicators.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whether you see the patterns in the sky or you're just noticing abstract patterns or any pattern.
Whatever patterns attract your attention if you're in that mode. Good, Mark. Thank you.
Let's see. Hapa said very nice comments.
Okay.
Vadir said to hear them all together was beautiful.
There you go.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah, and that's an exercise in itself. If we're not in a position quite yet to write that for ourselves, just as a nice exercise, go there and just read through some of these that individuals have put up. And you can see where they were standing when they wrote them. It's just, there's a purity to this that's quite nice.
I know for me, that I had to, well, I just felt allowed to do it.
Nice.
And allowed to put it out in public, that this was a space that it was okay.
It is a space that's okay. So when we're in that, when we can get our machines, we can awaken them in macro ourselves to the macro dimensions, and then we work to awaken the machine. There's a number of things. One is you can put on the exercise of what do you see with these different eyes. That's one way to do it. The other thing is to see how your vibrational effect is on others. That's another key. How do you see the effect? Okay? That's another important thing. So our work is plentiful here. It's we have a great deal about us. Take the time to read some of these paragraphs that we just went over and mark down how you might work with them during this coming week. Because this is a very, very unique time right now. And let's take that time. We garner that uniqueness because we are working together as a group. And the group, in a sense, has opened a portal for us here. That's another function that has occurred because of various things that various people are doing. A portal has been opened. Because of that opportunity, we should take the advantage and walk through the portal when we have that chance. Okay? Make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. There you have it.
I have one more comment.
Well, okay then.
This is from Star.
And yes.
She said, great explanation, Ivan, of what you felt. I can feel those feelings coming from your words. Very powerful.
Hello, thank you.
Well, we have a lot before us, and we have a lot of material to cover, and we have a lot of resources with which to cover the material, and we'll do that together.
Can I ask you one more thing about the website?
You can, if you turn your machine on.
About
wingsofchaos.com. When we go on Wings of Chaos, in order to get to this particular section, we have to put a hashtag ABD, is that right? Is that what you were saying?
What I'm saying is you go on wingsofchaos.com, and then you're going to see all the various books that we've read.
Mm-hmm.
One is going to be ABD. And if you hold your cursor on ABD, it says, right below it, it says, the last hours of life. And if you don't, you just hold your cursor there, and then you're going to see 10 different names show up.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And you just kind of slightly move your cursor over, and you can pick any one.
Okay. Great.
Like a drop-down menu.
Okay.
Like a drop-down menu.
Good.
There may be ways to make it a little bit easier, but I just don't know what they are.
I got a little confused when so I was just wondering.
Yes, you're not the only one.
Okay.
I just don't know how to do it better.
It's not for nothing. It's called Wings of Chaos.
Wingsofchaos.com. Learning to ride the wings of chaos.
Ride.
So thank you for coming this evening, and thank you for making all of this possible. And I look forward to seeing all of you next week on Wednesday evening. Good night.
Thanks, David and Ivan and MA.
Thank you.
Thank you,
thank
Joy.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye, Judy. See you soon.
Good night. Thank you all.